Okay, well, good morning, and hello to all the people down the end there. I won't be walking down that way. Apparently, if I walk past this speaker, bad things will happen to our ears, and there may be a few people here who won't appreciate that after last night, so I'll just be staying in the middle here. Thanks all for coming. Thanks for getting up early to come to the first session. So I'm going to be talking about identity, and some of you may know me as a FIM person, Forefront Identity Manager, but this talk is not just about FIM, it goes a lot broader than that. And I wanted to do this talk actually for one reason, one conversation that I've now had about 10 times. And it goes like this. Person says to me, we're planning on migrating to Office 365. And because we're going to use ADFS, that means we don't need DirSync. Anyone else find that odd? Because I'm there going, what? You see, one of these is about provisioning, and one of these is about logon. They're different things. It's not one or the other, it's one and the other. They're two different puzzle pieces. They fit together. And I thought, you know, this is how I see it, but obviously a lot of other people don't. So I wanted to try and give you this sort of picture of identity as crossing different boundaries, as being different pieces that we have to fit together. So this is the attempt with this talk today. Now, of course, I can't tell you everything there is to know about identity, because we would be here for 3 days. And I'm sure you all have other things to do. But I am going to give you one thing, actually, I will say that's been quite fun putting this talk together over the last few months. Well, quite fun and quite annoying as well. I've had to rewrite it about 4 times. Because there's been so much new stuff coming out. And this is actually quite unusual for me. Anyone here who is familiar with the history of FIM may know that it moves at a fairly glacial pace. And to have all this new stuff to look at and play with in the last couple of months it's actually been quite cool. So I'm going to share a few of these things with you today. It is going to be very much breadth, not depth. There will be things that you've already seen this week, I hope, and other things that you won't have. So let's start with my metaphor, my identity jigsaw puzzle. At the center, we have authentication and authorization. Who are you and what can you do? And obviously, this is what it's all about. This is what we're trying to get to here. So we're going to have directories. And I'm using directory here in a very generic way to mean any place that digital identities live. So obviously, you have your Active Directory, your Azure Directory, but you've also got databases, you've got directories that are used only by one particular application or system. But we have to consider those when we're looking at identity management. Users need to log on. So how are we going to make them log on? Are we happy with just a username password? If there are passwords, how are we going to manage them? What do we do if people forget them? Do we need a two-factor authentication? What are we going to do when people forget that second factor of authentication, that token? All these things have to be thought about. Provisioning. Now, I'm using provisioning in a very generic way here. Provisioning is often used to mean create something or grant access to something, provision access to something. But I'm using it in a more general way also to cover ongoing updates. And very importantly, deprovisioning. We mustn't forget the deprovisioning, the taking the access away when that user account should no longer have it. Access control. This is something that I think is becoming more nuanced. There's more, not just you have access to this, go, but what kind of access? How can you use this? How can you share it? Mobility, obviously very important. Here I'm talking about both mobile devices and mobile users. And development. Because if the applications themselves are developed in the old way, where the application thinks it's the whole world, and it completely controls its user accounts, it completely controls the provisioning and the logon. So if the applications develop like that, well, all the rest of these puzzle pieces don't fit into it. So what we need is applications to be developed in the newer ways, where there is a layer of abstraction between the identity provider and the application, which is just consuming that information from the identity provider. And then if we need to change something, how the logon works, for instance, add a second factor of authentication, change the directory that people are using, then we can do that. Now, most importantly, and there's a reason I coloured this grey, the grey areas. All these sorts of things that get left as afterthoughts, audit, logging, reporting, governance. These things are difficult. They're important for every component, but they're often things that we can't solve with technology alone. And you know, we're technologists, right? We like to solve things with technology. These things can get a bit sticky. We need to talk to the business. We need to get them to make some decisions, write some stuff down, have some policies. It can be difficult, but important. So that was a nice picture, wasn't it? But the history of identity management and communication between those different puzzle pieces, you know, I feel has been a bit more like this. But anyway, that's the past. Let's look to the future. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through each of those puzzle pieces. I'm going to talk a little bit about key trends, and then I'll show you one or two Microsoft technologies that I think really express those trends. And the big trend in directory is identity as a service. So has anyone heard that term this week? So, you know, Azure Active Directory is identity as a service. And I'll be using this term again a few times as we go through, so it's probably best to explain it as we're looking at how, you know, why Azure is actually an identity as a service provider. Okay, so we all know that Azure Active Directory is the directory for Microsoft SaaS applications. Also, Azure on-prem Active Directory can be used by third-party applications or in-house applications as their directory, so too can Azure AD. So this is the idea that this should be your directory in the cloud, and applications that you have running in the cloud as much as possible should use Azure AD. That would be the ideal. But the other really interesting thing is that Microsoft are positioning Azure AD to be able to be a gateway, a conduit to other SaaS applications. And here we're not talking Microsoft ones. So Google Apps, Salesforce, other SaaS applications that have their own directory, that require their own user account and are not just going to say, yeah, we're happy to use Azure. And this is one of the core concepts of identity as a service. We want one managed identity in the cloud. So we got into a lot of trouble on-prem, didn't we? We had our Active Directory, but we still had so many applications that didn't use it. We ended up with multiple user accounts that had to be managed on-prem. Let's not try and get into that same mess in the cloud. So the notion of identity as a service is that there should be one managed corporate identity. And this means two different things. For users, it means a single sign-on point. They should be able to just go sign on with their Azure account and get a seamless access to their other SaaS applications. From the point of view of an administrator, it should mean one place to manage that identity, one place to keep the particulars up to date, one place even to assign these other SaaS applications. That's where this is heading. Of course, on-prem's not going away anytime soon, so we need to bridge our on-prem identities with our cloud identities. And the main Microsoft way of doing this is DirSync, which is actually just FimSync, but black boxed with the sole function of synchronizing an on-prem Active Directory into Azure. If you want, you can layer ADFS on top of that. And that will then give single sign-on using the on-prem account. But like I said, it's layered on top, it's not one or the other. Just a couple of recent things about DirSync. It now syncs the password hash from on-prem to the cloud. You would use this instead of ADFS. There's no need for single sign-on. What you're giving your users then is same sign-on, same password in the cloud. There is also a management agent. There's actually been a management agent for FIM for quite some time, but it was only available for big Microsoft Consulting Services customers. But now it is available in preview. You can download it from Connect, and it should be generally available very shortly. And the this is the proposed solution for multi-forest. So DirSync only synchronizes one on-prem forest to your Azure tenant. The idea is that with FIM, you can actually connect multiple Active Directory forests on one side and then have your Azure connector out the other side. So I just wanted to show you this, the Azure application panel. Has anyone seen a shot of this week? Has anyone been showing this? Yeah, a couple of people. So this is in preview at the moment. And this is this notion of users having one place where they can go and access their other SaaS applications. So this is the panel that the users will see that shows them the applications that they have been assigned. And you see there, we've got Dropbox, we've got Salesforce. It's not just Microsoft stuff. And when they click on that application, they should have a single sign-on experience. And this can take two forms. Either the target application supports a federated logon, in which case it really is a single sign-on. It's accepting the fact that they're already logged on to Azure. Yep, away you go. If that's not possible for some reason, then it can operate the way LastPass does. So it's a password saver. The user will have to enter their username and password once. That's encrypted, it's stored with their user account in your Azure tenant. They also need a browser plugin, and that will then insert the credentials for them as they attempt to access that application. So here we have Azure AD really becoming that single identity portal for your users, which is very good, very interesting, I think. So let's have a talk about logon. So I mentioned federated single sign-on. So all that means is I can sign on to your application or service using my account from over here. And there are a couple of main ways that this happens. The first one is OAuth, Open Authentication Protocol. So that's the one you're using when you see that logon with my Facebook account button on many, many websites. That's OAuth. SAML is the protocol used by Federation Services. It has a bigger scope. We'll be talking more about ADFS coming up, but certainly its scope is not just logon, it's also supposed to include claims which have more information about the users. But certainly a trend I've been noticing is actually SAML just being used for logon. Like that, the only claim anyone cares about is this person authenticated. I guess at least once we get the SAML in there for authentication, maybe we can start, you know, filling it out later. Now, multi-factor authentication using mobile phone, I'm sure you've all seen this. You've probably, you know, many of us are now using our phones with our banking, our internet banking. You know, we can have long conversations about whether it's a good idea or not, but it's certainly very pragmatic, especially if you've got external users, you can't be supplying them all with company-owned tokens. So there's a lot of work going on with multi-factor authentication using personal phones. And the other idea is that logon should be variable. Logon should be context-based. We shouldn't have the same logon ceremonies to pass in all circumstances. Sometimes we're in a less secure environment. Maybe we need that second factor of authentication. So I'm going to show you the web application proxy and the Windows Azure AD multi-factor authentication. But just before I do that, I want to talk about ADFS. So who here has a good understanding of how ADFS works? Yeah, that's good. Okay, some people do, so you can sleep through this. I just wanted to make sure everyone was completely clear about its role, how it fits in. So the first thing about ADFS is that it's about a user in one security domain accessing an application or service in another security domain using their home credentials. And no passwords are going across the wire here. The service provider doesn't even need to know what their password is, they just need to know they're authenticated. The next thing to understand about it is the whole thing works on the web level. And it actually all works by browser redirects, which is very nice because there's no client to install and it'll work across all sorts of different platforms. So just a little animation showing how this works. User browses the application. The application says you need a token. So redirects the browser to the service provider's Federation server. Now some work has already had to have happened. the service providers, Federation server, needs to know about where the user's coming from. There already needs to be some configuration done to say, we trust this identity provider. We trust that we'll get good information from them. And they also need to know the address of the Federation server on the user's side. Okay? So the service provider's Federation server redirects the browser to the identity provider's Federation server. It then arranges the token. So if the user is not currently logged on, then a logon box pops up. The user logs on to their own domain. In addition, we may need some extra claim information, which we can get from places like Active Directory or databases. So here I'm saying that the token that's required says the person, we've validated this person, yes, they're logged on, and as well, they're a member of this particular group you wanted to know about. So a token is constructed, sent back to the browser. The browser now redirects again to the service provider's Federation server with that token. The service provider's Federation server decrypts the token and then re-encrypts it. Now, the decryption is really just to prove that it came from the right place. So it uses the public key of the identity provider's Federation server just as a way of saying, yes, actually, it did come from there. The thing to understand is there's no validation done of the claims information. The service provider completely trusts that the identity provider is giving it accurate information. It then re-encrypts the token using its own key. This shows it's verified. And finally, the browser is redirected back to the application with that token the application can now accept. Now, all this happens in a matter of moments. If the user happens to be watching their address bar, they may see the URL change. They may be prompted to log on at some point. But it's fast and it's mostly transparent to the user. So that's the basic crux of ADFS. Now, I wanted to talk about the web application proxy, which is a new server role in Server 2012 R2. And the first thing about it is that it replaces the ADFS proxy from the earlier versions. It requires ADFS internally. So normally you put your web app proxy in your DMZ, and internally you have your ADFS server. That must be a 2012 R2 version of ADFS, which now, in fact, you can install on a domain controller. You couldn't do that before. So that's now a role that's installable on a domain controller. So just like with previous versions of the ADFS proxy, this proxies authentication requests to external applications that your internal users have access to. So SaaS applications, or maybe you have a partner relationship with another enterprise and your users are allowed to get single sign-on access to some of their applications. But there's one very new thing about the web app proxy. It's actually used to publish your internal applications for access from the internet, just like UAG and TMG did, or do, still do. So you can publish applications, and it's not just claims-based applications now. It's not just federated applications. We can publish Kerberos applications, OAuth applications, and even forms-based applications that use NTLM and BASIC. It's just a bit of a different user experience depending on the type of application. If it's one that accepts some kind of token-based logon, and by this I mean a claims token, a Kerberos token, an OAuth token, then it's effectively a single sign-on. The user logs on at the web app proxy, that logon is brokered via ADFS with the internal AD, and then they have full access to those applications. If it's a forms-based application, they're going to have to type in their username and password at that application. That's the only thing it accepts. And the final point there is that the access logic is actually different per application. And I'm going to show you a couple of screenshots here from the preview. So this may be slightly different now, I'm not sure. Just highlighting a couple of points there. The first screen is the primary logon, and you see we can have a different rule for extranet and intranet. And what I do expect is there'll be more options available there for what we want to enable. And on the other side, it's our multi-factor authentication tab, because multi-factor authentication is actually built in to the web app proxy. And again, you see, we've got a different choice based on whether it's an extranet or an intranet connection. And actually, well, just the box up the top, I didn't put a red box around it, but you, if you can see there, it says users and groups. So we can also specify that only certain users and groups require multi-factor as well. We're starting to get a lot more of that context-sensitive logon with our web app proxy. Just a bit of a summary there. So it's part of Server 2012 R2, replaces the ADFS proxy, publishes applications, multi-factor built in, and that variable authentication. Right, so I wanted to talk about Azure multi-factor authentication. Has anyone seen this week? I was in one session where it was mentioned. So some of you may have, if you're keen Microsoft watchers, may have heard last year when Microsoft bought PhoneFactor. And PhoneFactor is a product that is set up to provide a second factor of authentication based on phones. And this is what it's become. It's become the Azure AD multi-factor authentication service, which you can subscribe to. So first I'm going to show you how it works with a SaaS application that uses Azure AD as its directory. So, user goes to log on to SaaS application. SaaS application says you need to log on to Azure AD. In Azure, we have configured that we need multi-factor authentication. So first it checks the username password, and then it contacts the user's phone. And you see there, we actually have an option of voice call, text message, or a smartphone app. So they don't have to have a smartphone. You can actually just take a phone call and it says, you know, press hash. There we go. But what's really interesting about this, I think, is that it's available to use on-prem. So you can go, this is again, it's in preview, but you can go and sign up for the preview, and there's a link there. You can download the server, which you install on-prem. And this is how it works. User accesses on-prem application. On-prem application uses one of these types of authentication. So it can actually just be doing an LDAP bind, for instance. We need to sort of put the multi-factor authentication server there between the application and AD, which we can just do with, you know, sort of a DNS change or however we want to do that. The multi-factor authentication server then brokers the logon with AD, and it then contacts the multi-factor authentication service in the cloud, and that contacts the user's phone. So, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into setting up all this phone authentication, right? It's got to be able to send text messages, make phone calls, and it does it on a global scale. Yeah?
How's that license?
It is a service, so it is a service that you pay for by users. But, you know, I think this is really interesting because this now brings all this infrastructure, all this capability within the grasp of much smaller organisations that really haven't had this option in the past. One last point is if you add the web app proxy in there, the multi-factor authentication service can be installed on an ADFS proxy. So you add the web app proxy in there, and that then starts to give you that more conditional per application, per context basis. We can really start to build up exactly what we need in terms of authentication here. So I think that's pretty interesting. Let's talk about provisioning now. So, you know, I'm a FIM person. FIM is all about provisioning. And, you know, personally, I think no one should be creating user accounts by hand. Anyone here creating user? No, look, I know everyone's creating user accounts by hand. Stop it, all right? It leads to inconsistency. It leads to difficulties with trying to tell who is who. It leads to an awful lot of accounts never getting disabled when they should. I'm sure we all know this. So, you know, the core of FIM is really that we want to automate all that stuff. But really, most of the development in the last couple of years in this area has been very much cloud-focused. A lot of big development's being backed up by the major SaaS providers. And, you know, this is because they do get it. They do understand that it's actually not very tempting for us to be given another whole environment of user accounts that we have to manage by hand. And that it's absolutely critical that we need ways that we can automate that we can do it all on a computer-to-computer level and not a person sitting there having to type things in. So the big focus has definitely been on these APIs, these web APIs that we can use for provisioning accounts. However, interestingly to me, Identity Sync is as important as ever. And I am going to give you a little brief overview of FIM and how it fits in, and then we're going to have another look at Azure. So Forefront Identity Manager. At its heart, it's an identity synchronization engine. It has a number of out-of-the-box connectors that connect to all the kind of, you know, the major directories that you find in typical organizations. And as well as that, you can write your own. And it can do lots of neat things with PowerShell as well. You can always do neat things with PowerShell. Obviously, a lot of people focus on provisioning, onboarding. You know, so new person pops up in the HR database, we grab their particulars, we go off and provision accounts that they need. But with FIM, we really want to manage the whole life cycle. Deprovisioning is just as important. So we want to have access to that information as well about when people have left, when they've changed jobs. In 2010, they added the FIM service and portal, which is built on SharePoint and Windows Workflow Foundation. And it's very much focused around approval workflows, notification workflows, that sort of thing. Person requests something, it gets approved, and you know, once all the ducks are lined up, then we can just let the sync service take over, create accounts, put people in groups. So that's in a nutshell what FIM does. Let's have another look at this application panel. So I've already talked about the single sign-on that's going on there. Now what's really great is that you can enable automatic provisioning of accounts in these other SaaS applications. And I just want to show you this. This is what you need to do to enable automatic account creation in Google Apps. So person has an account in Azure AD, you select that this person should have Google Apps. Within 10 minutes, the identity synchronization service running in Azure AD will create their Google Apps account for you. And all you need to do is enter your Google Apps domain username password that has rights to create those accounts. I wish it was always this easy. It's pretty neat stuff. Okay, let's have a bit of a talk about access control. So just like with authentication, a key trend is to be a bit more context aware. This is also the case with access control, authorization. Should be variable based on context. And another point I've said is governance. And is this a trend or is this just something we've been talking about for years? I'm not really sure. It's a very general term, governance. But for me, what it means is having some deliberate approach to access control. It's not just based on person shouting, person phoning help desk, person being given access. You know, there are actually some rules, there is actually some thought that's gone into what are our policies, what are our data protection requirements, how are we going to govern this properly. And what I'm actually going to show you here is just a little bit about Behold, which is was bought by Microsoft about a year and a half ago and bundled in with Forefront Identity Manager 2010 R2. And what it is a role-based access control solution. So I'm sure many of you know role-based access control is just this notion that we should be able to assign people access to things based on their job, based on where they sit in the organisation, based on a project they're working on. Try and automate those access control granting and also revoking through the roles they have. It's not easy to do, but that's the idea. So in Behold, roles can be organisational, they can be inherited, so you can have a hierarchy of business units or a hierarchy of locations or something and rights get inherited. They can be directly assigned, and we can also enforce separation of duties when we have roles that are incompatible. It has a number of modules. One of them is the model generator. This is to help you building your role model, which if you haven't had this concept in your organisation in the past is not a trivial task, but that will help you analyse the permissions that have been granted already and try and map those to your org structure. Analytics is actually when you're up and running and you want to preview how a change is going to impact your users. The attestation module is the one I've got a few slides about coming up. There is a self-service plug-in to the FIM portal, so people can do things like request a particular role or even delegate their role to someone else while they're going away. And finally, it has its own reporting. So, but I wanted to talk about the attestation module because I think this is the one that most organisations could probably get benefit from first. And it goes in with this idea of, you know, continuous authorisation. You shouldn't just grant people rights for life. You know, there needs to be an ongoing review process in many cases. People move jobs and they retain rights that they actually don't need anymore. So in the attestation module, you define campaigns. And they may be one-off or they may be recurrent. We can base it on person has an account in a particular system, or we can actually delve into that system and look at specific permissions. Validation requests are sent to stewards. Stewards are assigned to users based on a number of different criteria, depending what your requirements are. Very simply, it could just be a manager. The manager has to say, yes, they still get access to this system. It could be the application owner. Or we can actually just load in a CSV which matches stewards to users. Steward's decision can be overridden by an administrator. And finally, that final point, if you're all connected through to FIMSync, so we have Behold plugs into FIMSync, if the target application is also connected to FIMSync, we could actually go right ahead and just disable that account. So a couple of screenshots on how it looks. Defining a campaign. So here I'm going to define a campaign to review who has access to the CRM system. I need to define a scope. So their organisational units doesn't mean AD, OUs, it actually means business units. So I could potentially target the campaign just at one part of the business. Here I'm going to say, no, all users of this application. It shows me a list of the applications that Behold currently knows about. I select the granularity. Do I want to just attest that an account exists, or do I want to delve in and start talking about specific permissions? So I'll just attest the accounts. This is how do I define my stewards. If I want to go for a user attribute based, I also need to select which attribute. So I'd like the managers to do this job. And finally there, I'm just selecting my CRM application. We have a number of email templates in the system. These can be modified to suit your particular purpose. Various variables that you can insert in that template there. So what's going to happen is all the stewards are going to receive an email saying, please visit the attestation portal, you've got some work to do. They click on the link, they're brought into the attestation portal. They'll see a list of any campaigns they have something to do in. This person's just got the one. When they open that, they'll see a list of the users that they're responsible for attesting. Now, first they need to actually say they are responsible for that person. We may have had some old data about managers and one could have gone to the wrong person. And then finally, it's just a simple approve or deny. And what you do here is really up to you. You could run this really just in reporting mode if you wanted to. Get some report out of it, decide how to handle that. Or as I said before, if we're connected through the FIMSync service and they deny that, we could go cut it off. So, onto mobility. I don't need to tell you guys that BYOD is a big trend. I said device identification here is a trend because, you know, this has been a thing that people have been worrying about for some time. You know, if we're not managing these devices, do we still need to know something about them? Do we still want to know which devices are being used? And what I wanted to show you here was Workplace Join. Has anyone seen Workplace Join this week? Yeah, just a few people. Okay, good, that has come up in something then. I asked that last week in Gold Coast and no one seemed to have heard of it. And that was on a Friday session as well. Okay, so this is another new role in Server 2012 R2. When you install your first 2012 R2 domain controller, it will extend the schema and you will then find you have a device object class. And this is actually for registering mobile devices. Now, this is not a domain join. The device does not become managed in any way. All it is we know this device. As part of the registration process, a certificate is dropped on the device, And this then can actually be used as a second factor of authentication. And the workplace join endpoint is published using the web app proxy. And so just a little schematic of how that looks. So we've got our web app proxy there in the middle, which is publishing that endpoint. People can access that both from inside and outside, by the way. So they could register their home computer from home. The device registration service needs to be running on the internal ADFS server, and that brokers the creation of that device object in AD and also gets that certificate to pass back to the device. And there's a bunch of different devices that are supported. And they're not, you know, they can be mobile phones, but they can also be home computers, laptops, tablets, whatever. So remember, this is not a managed device. Some of you may have been in that. There was a BYOD session yesterday where the guy was talking about Intune. You know, that's completely different. This is really just, we know this device. And back to those screens before with the web app proxy. The idea is here we can say enable a device registration, and then we could actually use that in a multi-factor decision. So perhaps we say to our users, if you register your home computer, then you can have a single sign-on from that home computer. But if you log on from somewhere else, we're going to need that second factor of authentication. So that's the general idea. Okay. So development. So I mentioned before, you know, about these SaaS vendors recognizing that provisioning needs to be done through APIs. And I'm sure everyone's heard this term, RESTful APIs, now. That seems to be getting bandied around a lot these days. And as far as I can tell, that just means that it's an endpoint that's accessible through web protocols on a web address. And we use standard HTTP methods to exchange information. So APIs that are actually focused on creation, update, and delete of user accounts, groups, and other identities is definitely a big trend. And the other one that I mentioned right at the beginning is that applications should use providers, identity providers, rather than attempting to control identity. There should be an abstraction layer in the application. And what I'm actually talking about here is Windows Identity Foundation. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about that. In fact, it's been around for years. But it's .NET libraries that enable application developers to actually develop their application in this kind of way, with this layer of abstraction. What we are going to look at is the Graph API for Azure AD. So the Graph API is the API that is used for people who want to write applications that use Azure AD as their directory, but it also has a whole lot of stuff to do with updating those identities that live in Azure AD. So the focus is very much on CRUD operations, create, update, delete, and also on search operations, and searching as well that follows connections between objects. Because that's what it's all about these days. It's all about people having lots of different connections and edges, and, you know, and we want to follow those through. It has native support for OAuth and SAML, and it's designed from the ground up for query speed and accessibility. And I just want to show you a couple of screenshots here. I'm not going to go into this in detail. There is actually a talk later today with some more about Graph. But I just wanted to show you this as an example of a user creation using Graph. And you see, it's just an HTTP post operation. We're posting to an address. We've got our body there, which has some information about the user that we want to create. And down the bottom, we get a standard HTTP response to say it was created successfully. I wanted to show you this as well. This is an example of a Graph query. It's just a URL in a particular format. So first we address Graph itself, and then the green part there, that's the tenant. The blue part, we tell it what type of object we're interested in. Now the red part here, I find that quite interesting. We actually tell it which version of the API to use. And updates to Graph are actually coming thick and fast. They're releasing updates to Graph every few weeks. And what they're doing is they're keeping all versions of the API available. So if you've written something to a particular version of the API, you can say, I want to use that one, and be happy that your application will continue to work while they're going ahead and adding new versions. And the last bit there is the query string. It's an OData query, and that's a very simple one. Just show me all users who are in Western Australia. We can also do things like query based on those relationships, member of, manager, and we can also do a differential query. Give me all the changes since the last time I asked. Okay, so again, not going into a lot of detail of that, but just want to give you an impression. So, my difficult grey areas. I'm not going to show you any particular technologies here. You know, partly because... Don't give me that face. Partly because a lot of us are still using things like Excel, SQL reporting services, System Center. You know, there's no one thing that can give us audit across all our identity layer, analyze our data quality across all our identity layer. And this is because there's still too much that's disjointed. So it's very hard to come in with one reporting package that's going to tell us everything. But what I do think, and I find this encouraging, is that reporting is increasingly becoming a first-class citizen, and not just people saying that, but actually doing it. And, you know, I worked with a customer who was an early adopter of BPOS, and reporting, not so much. Logging, can't have the logs, sorry, you're in a shared tenancy. Things have really changed in the last few years. And going in and checking out some of these new services that are in preview, and the reporting is right there, straight away. So there is definitely that recognition now, we need these tools. And I do hope in time, as we get more standards, as we get better joined up in our identity layer, that that will open us up to better methods and better tools. So I wanted to do a quick use case to sort of bring this all together. I'm not saying here this is the way to do this, it's just to sort of demonstrate how you might think it out with those different components. And the use case is an application hosted internally that you want both internal and external users to be able to access. A very common requirement these days. So, first we need to think about directory. We would like our internal users to use the corporate ID. What about our external users? Well, maybe we have a trusted federated partner, an identity provider that we can use. Or perhaps, with the nature of this application, we're actually happy to accept one of those commonly used identity providers like Facebook or Google. Obviously, this will depend on your requirements and your application security. If none of that's going to work, what a lot of people still are forced to do is set up a domain for the externals, often in their DMZ. If you do that, I've got some other stuff about if you do that later. We'll get to that. So the last one here is that the application will often need its own identity store as well. So maybe we also need to be thinking about how are we going to provision the profiles in that identity store. Even if it's using Active Directory for authentication, most applications still need a profile store of some sort. We may still need to think about that. So, provisioning. Perhaps internally we have FIM, and FIM can handle provisioning those internal users. For the externals, we might need to think along the lines of a self-registration portal. For logon, we could use the web app proxy to publish the application and broker the authentication for our internal users via ADFS. For the externals, if we're lucky enough that we do have a trusted identity provider out there in the world somewhere, then again, we can configure that through the web application proxy. However, if we're going with that externals domain, then we need to think about extra things as well, like, for example, password reset. If we're the identity provider, we're managing those identities, that's our problem. So we might use FIM self-service password reset or something else. Access control. So that's two different points there, even though it doesn't look much like it. The basic choices are, you know, the application manages the access control. We have to go in and configure that in the application. Or maybe we've developed the application in this modern claims-based way, in which case we would also need to have used Windows Identity Foundation in developing that application. And finally, mobility. Well, hopefully we got that sorted out with our web application proxy, and maybe we've also installed the device registration service and we're letting people do that workplace join, that device registration. So you see I've ended up with quite a few different boxes on this picture. And you know, this really brings me to my core trend, I guess, my core message today. And that's that identity is not one thing. There's not one box, one server in your environment that does everything to do with identity, right? It's a layer. It's a layer that runs through your whole service delivery infrastructure. And that's how we need to be thinking about it. And my hope, well, no, my belief, is that in time, progressively, as we adopt more standards with the technology we choose, and as we also follow best practices, thinking about data quality, thinking about governance, that over time, we will find that these different pieces in our identity layer do fit together like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. So that's where we're going, yeah? Okay, so I've got no idea what the time is. Gosh, flew through that. Didn't feel like I was gabbling. Is that all right? Yeah, that's cool. Okay, look, I wanted to show you these references. There's some great sessions that are available on Channel 9 that I got a lot of benefit from while I was preparing this session. So if you want to know more about web app proxy and workplace join and the Graph API, I really recommend watching these. And related content, yeah, there's another guy this afternoon who's doing a talk about identity in Windows Azure, and he's going to be talking more about Graph and that application provisioning and single sign-on, so that might be quite interesting to you. And I'll be around for the rest of the day. There's a stand in the exhibition hall, Unify Optimal IDM. I'll probably be hanging around there if anyone wants to talk to me. But I've got time for questions. Yes. Okay, so question about dynamic access control. So for those of you who don't know, this was something that was introduced in Server 2012. And it's this idea that we can grant access to the file system based on people's particulars, so based on the department they're in, as opposed to having to put them in a whole lot of groups. So it is a form of role-based access control. But you asked particularly if ADFS could be used. And not really. It's tightly integrated with AD. But what I will say about dynamic access control is that, again, with all of these things that use claims, which it effectively is, the quality of your identity data is absolutely key. So it's all very well to go and say only people in the HR department can have access to this file share. But if there's all sorts of garbage in your department attribute in Active Directory, that's just not going to work. And it might not even be a case that people, you know, it says they're in the HR department when they're not. It's sometimes it's HR, sometimes it's human resources, sometimes it's HR.dept. You know, we need that consistency in our identity data for things like DAC to work. That's where FIM comes in. Thank you. Yes. You get a T-shirt. Anyone else? Yeah?
I'm interested in the target management space. So that beholding is great for attestations. Mm. Can you get into the system? Once you're in the system, that Windows Identity Foundation, that's all about claims. So it's not about entitlements or...
Windows Identity Foundation is a .NET library. It is specifically about developing claims-aware applications or applications that support OAuth, applications that you can plug identity providers into. So, yeah, Windows Identity Foundation is specifically about development. So you're talking about entitlements, so this idea that people are entitled to access a particular resource and maybe that can expire,
yeah,
or maybe they can move on. We should maybe have a chat about this later. This is like a hard question for me to repeat. Whole lot about, it's all about entitlements and behold, and his head's like, and I've got you thinking, haven't I? Yes, okay. See the wheels moving. Yes. Okay, so trends in cloud service providers. So there's in terms of provisioning, actually, there is a protocol called SCIM, which has been developed by a lot of big names, including Ping Identity and Google. And Microsoft have kind of been in there as an interested party more than an actual full partner. And this is it's an emerging standard for provisioning via RESTful APIs using JSON as the payload. So in fact, it looks very similar to that picture I put up before about the creation with Graph. Now, the reason Microsoft haven't gone with SCIM is because Graph actually does a lot more. So SCIM is very focused just on those CRUD operations, whereas with Graph, they're trying to provide a complete API for application developers who want to use Azure as the core directory for their product. So, yeah, I would say SCIM is kind of a big thing that's happening out there. Microsoft, it's all Graph, but the two are very compatible, and they're certainly the same fundamental approach. It's a RESTful API. It's using JSON as the payload because that's the smallest number of characters that we can get that information in. You know, it's all supporting OAuth. So, yeah, definitely things are moving in these standards directions, which is great. Not before time. Identity always lags a bit behind everything else, but okay. Anyone else, or we're done here? Okay, well, thank you very much.